You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. Old Movie BS is back together again.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. Congratulations, you found it, the only movie podcast on the internet. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, and this is my other host, Eric D. Jeff Bear. For a minute, I thought there were two of me.
Oh my God, the cat was almost out of the bag. You do both voices. Hello, everyone. I am Jeff Bear. That was Eric D. Snyder. This is Movie BS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello, welcome to it. It's the holiday season, which for some reason... In early December means that they're just not putting out movies. They're sort of, I wonder if Hollywood's playing it like, playing it by ear week by week, whether they're going to keep on being in business. Like they don't want to commit to anything.
They're a little nervous. They have an actor in a movie, so they don't know if that movie is going to be under any scrutiny.
Right, right.
So yeah, it's either that or they got messed up on when Star Wars was actually coming out.
I think, yeah.
And they're like, well, we can't. It's going to get clobbered by Star Wars.
Right. Which Star Wars not till next week. But this week, there's only one wide release. It's called Just Getting Started. we've seen a poster for it, and I asked on Twitter, and people have seen a trailer. So this exists as a movie. Written and directed by Ron Shelton, who made...
One of the greatest sports movie directors of all time.
Because he made, for example...
Tin Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And Bull Durham.
Bull Durham, yeah. And this thing looks like it's like a bounty hunter and a bad guy situation or something. Morgan Freeman and Tommy Lee Jones and Rene Russo.
Oh, wait. It has nothing to do with sports?
I don't think so. It doesn't appear to.
Oh, I thought they were just getting started with sport.
No, I think they're just getting started with being old and dying, I guess. But not screened for critics. So we don't know about that. And then some others, The Disaster Artist, which opened small last week, is going wide this week. So you can see that. And then on a couple of screens, if you're in New York or L.A. this weekend, you can see I, Tanya, do solemnly swear. And boy, she does solemnly swear.
She swears all over the place.
This is the story of Tanya Harding. And here we need to talk about our history with...
Sure.
With Tanya Harding. The whole thing, the incident, as they call it in the movie, the incident, happened in January of 1994. Early 94, all this went down. I, as longtime listeners of the show will remember, was a Mormon missionary at that time. From fall of 93 to fall of 95. So all of 94, I missed, pop culture-wise. I would hear snippets. I remember hearing references to some big thing going on with a ice skater whacked another ice skater in the knee or something. But I missed all of the intense craziness, which apparently was like OJ levels, which I also mostly missed.
I missed nothing.
Yeah.
I ate it all up. I was living in the Midwest at the time. I was not out in the Portland area where Tanya Harding has spent a lot of her. Yeah, yeah. I was definitely rooting for Nancy Kerrigan the entire time.
Even before all this?
Before all this.
Right, right.
I even remember that because I was – if it was sports, I was eating it up, period. Winter Olympics.
Did you have an opinion of Tanya Harding? Because evidently she was this sort of vulgar white trash person.
Yeah. I remember thinking things like, huh, it's like she doesn't care about her hair. Interesting. I do. I remember that.
Yeah, no, I believe it.
What was really shocking here is how many outfits – I remember when I was watching this movie, it was just like, oh yeah, Tanya Harding wore that. Oh yeah, that one. I remember that one. And it's because, you know, I don't know if you've remember this. I certainly don't, but I don't have the best memory in the world.
That is true.
So this was kind of a lot of this was like a wake up of my past that I hadn't really considered or thought about for a long time.
Memories from almost 24 years ago now.
Yeah. And it's pretty dang fascinating, this film. Oh, man.
Directed by Craig Gillespie, who made...
Craig Gillespie.
Gillespie made Lars and the Real Girl, and then the Fright Night remake, and then Million Dollar Arm. Remember that with John Hamm going to get baseball players from India?
Yeah.
Oh, and The Finest Hours last year. This is quality stuff, I, Tonya. And it begins. It's framed by these interviews with the present day versions of these characters. Margot Robbie plays Tonya.
Go ahead.
Allison Janney is her mother, Lavanna. Sebastian Stan is Jeff Galooly. Bobby Cannavale as the hard copy reporter guy. We're seeing present day interviews with them talking about everything. And these interviews, this threw me. The interviews are framed in the almost square shape, like the old TVs,
right?
Which is and they were lower video quality, which made it look like they were interviews from like the 90s, but they're not. They're meant to be interviews from like now, from last year or something.
I don't think they're necessarily. No, I don't think it's. I don't think it's. Well,
because it says 40 years earlier, and we go back to her being 4 years old, which was 1974.
They were present day for some reason, because of the way that the movie started by saying these two, this information is taken from two different interviews that sound crazy, but like here we go.
Yeah, but those interviews, those framing interviews, are meant to be present day, which it threw me for a minute, but then I caught on. We keep cutting back to those as they comment, and then it's mostly the story of her as a little girl starting at four. She's a great skater in Portland. Her mom, she's sort of pushed into it by her mom, who wants her to want to be a star. And Tonya seems to want it too. Like that's the thing is she's not a very classy sort of person, but she works hard. Like she does the whole 6 hours a day training, and there's a bit later where we see her training, and her coach, who's played by Julianne Nicholson,
good job there,
Diane, too. Makes the point of saying to the camera that Tonya really did this, and we see her like carrying giant bags of dog food for weight training and stuff, and like really showing she put in the work. She wasn't just some slacker. She was great at what she did.
One of the things that I love about this film is the effort and the desire and the tenaciousness from Tonya Harding makes it really easy to root for her. The simplicity, the conniving, the the willingness to backstab, and the willingness to just hate what world she's entering but still want to beat it just makes it like another level, like over the top. And it just feels so utterly American with this idea to hide all of your flaws to achieve fame is almost like what it's kind of you walk through with her.
I found this whole thing I
was shocked that I could actually appreciate Tonya Harding and Jeff Galooly and their relationship and their desires and everything.
And for me, I didn't have much baggage with this. I think I told you that I knew this story, but it was only in the last few years that I could ever keep straight Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan of who was the good one and who was the bad one. Were the two figures involved, but and for me, I feel nothing but sympathy for Tonya Harding. The way the movie presents it,
that's impressive.
Even her aggressiveness and all that is just the way she was taught, trained by her mother. I mean, she's abused. She's physically abused by her mom from day one. And she gets this boyfriend, eventually husband, Jeff, who is sweet and awkward and shy at first, but then right away, physically abusive. And I'm like, nope, you're done. You're done, Jeff Galooly. I feel like this is what the movie is doing, is showing Tonya as this person who was a victim her whole life and made out to be this monster and who did some bad things. But even the movie, gets into the fact that we don't really know who knew what and when for sure. But the movie says that Nancy or that Tonya did not know about the plot to injure Nancy, because there was no plot to injure Nancy, because that was like a last minute, an audible. They called an audible on that one.
The perfect segue to talk about the wonderful performance by Paul Walter Hauser, who plays Sean Eckhart here. And
he's the tubby guy who had been Tanya's bodyguard.
If Allison Janney is not stealing the spotlight in this film, then he is. And both of them, just amazing supporting actors in this film.
Sean is just amazing, yeah, as Jeff's best friend. And
oh, my gosh. The
type of character he is, he's a confident, loudmouth, buffoon, bag of hot air. Like a Napoleon Dynamite kind of, you know, I got special skills kind of goofball. Yeah. And totally a hanger on. He's hanging on to Jeff, who is a slightly more cool guy. And there's a great moment where Jeff's like, oh, after they've broken up, and Jeff's like, oh, she's not going to get the last word. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to give her the last word because I'm the man. And Sean goes, we're the man. Like, yeah. Yeah, Sean, we're the man. He's great, and the guys that he brings in as the hard copy guy says, we had no idea that two of the biggest boobs these are going to be two of the biggest boobs in a story populated solely by boobs. And that's the other thing here that, in a way, this reminded me a little bit of The Disaster Artist, where we're really looking at a lot of boobs, a lot of people.
Yeah,
and Tanya's like Tanya's the best of them. The rest kind of don't have any excuse for being the idiots they are, many of them mean. Oh, the mom. I love Allison Janney's performance as this mom who does kind of loves her daughter. In her way, you see it now and then. There are moments of that natural, unavoidable motherly instinct that she keeps, for whatever reason, repressing so that she can drive her daughter to be a star. And so you can feel wounded at her daughter not being grateful enough to her. All of that is great. And we should mention it's all mostly pretty funny. Like the movie.
Yeah, oh, this is, yes.
It is definitely a comedy. And it makes fun of some of the characters. It makes fun of Galooly and especially Sean and those dopes. It doesn't make fun of Tanya, I don't think. I think that it shows her as being admittedly a redneck, white trash girl who can't afford expensive costumes and doesn't care that much. And you know, there's some fun to be had at her expense a little bit, but I don't think that it leans into it very hard at all.
And also with Margot Robbie, it is so nice to see that she has this range. Like we haven't seen this level of performance from her, especially without using. She's a beautiful woman, and a lot of her roles ask her to use a form of her sexuality. Mm-hmm. And this is just pretty flawless as far as her performance goes. It's really awesome to watch her dive deep into it,
and they do
like with the interviews and everything. Mm-hmm. And just like, yeah,
because she's playing Tanya at her present age of late 40s, and as well as start back to I think we first see her when Tanya is supposed to be 15, and she does a good job. I don't really buy that she's 15, but they do a good job of making her look about right, and she performs the role really well. Sometimes the characters will break the fourth wall to dispute the way the story is being told. Like we saw some of that in Wolf of Wall Street, didn't we?
Yes.
And some others recently where they say, this is not how the story went, but here you go. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. And that also helps. I noticed that began, I think that began when the domestic abuse started. When Jeff starts hitting her is when they start talking to the camera. And that helped to take away some of the awfulness of that.
It did.
For the person to step out of it and say, this is not real, I'm going to tell you this didn't happen. Even if, you know, it did happen, still, that it helps in the moment to cope with all that. How did you feel about the moment where Tanya says in one of the latter day interviews, says that when all the publicity happened after everything went down, after the incident, that it was like being attacked all over again, and that you people were my abusers too, my attackers too. That to me, it rang a little false because, you know, up to that point, the movie has been having fun with the story. You know, not exactly making fun of her, but it's definitely been using the story as entertainment. And so it almost feels like doing that and then turning around and saying, and shame on you for being entertained by it. I didn't feel really strong, but it rubbed me the wrong way a little bit.
For me, I actually took that more not about the movie, And not about it was more like when I went through that time, like it made me remember what I was feeling during that time, yeah, as opposed to enjoying this art. So I didn't, yeah, I didn't feel bad about myself at all.
But you do. I did. I came to, it's a sad story really about this woman who has been mistreated since day one and yeah, forced, like had to drop out of school to go full time for the skating and just never had her own life and has been mistreated by everyone. And then who was made into a villain for, it's from the movie's point of view, something that she did not do. She wasn't really part of. And yet she is the famous one. She's the one whose name is attached to it, as though, yeah, she had, you know, whacked Kerrigan in the knees
herself.
But
they don't say you got hardened. They say you got glue-lead.
Sure, like sure. They do say that, which, so that, which Jeff thinks is pretty cool, that his name is a verb. I feel bad for her. And I think, I mean, I guess that is the issue, is that we don't ultimately know whether she knew about the planned attack or not, right? And that's the thing that people still wonder about.
Right.
I mean, what was the consensus? Do people think that she did or that she didn't?
Well, at the time of the Olympics, it was just a matter of like people love to have an opinion on it. So it was, right, just a matter of like, I think she did, I think she didn't.
Well, but what did you end up thinking?
What was my ultimate conclusion?
Yeah. Do you have the sense that Tonya Harding, she helped plan this attack? She's a bad guy?
No, I never felt that she helped plan the attack. I always felt like she knew more than what she wanted to talk about.
All right. Yeah.
Like it's just like everything where it's like, oh, I'm not getting the full story and I'm probably not ever going to get the full story.
Right.
That's just what it felt like. And so for me, it was just a matter of, well, she didn't distance herself right away either. As you can see in the movie, it wasn't, right, like, you know, and that's what you do in that situation.
Yeah. The situation sort of got away from her after the fact.
Yeah.
It's a great performance by Margot Robbie. And I think it might reshape the way people think about this notorious figure from recent history, yeah, and how she kind of maybe in a lot of ways got a raw deal here.
I can't wait to see it again.
It's quite entertaining, fun. Oh, and the skating scenes, what they do with the skating scenes. I don't know how well Margot Robbie skates, but they do a really good job with a couple of her big skating scenes, convincingly faking it that she is doing the amazing skating and really pulling you into the whole performance. I thought that was well done as, yeah, well.
I think so for me being, you know, like such a visual stickler.
Well, here, let me say that. Let me finish though. I think that like you can see where the seams are. You can see that some things, yep, are not real, but you can't tell exactly how they're not real. You're not sure exactly what they did. Just, okay, yep, that's not quite real, but I don't know how they did it exactly.
For me, it's like, it's not quite real, but gosh darn it, I appreciate this because this looks like the best attempt I've ever seen at something like this.
Right.
Like that's how it felt to me. It's like, you're using your money really well, mm-hmm, here.
And for me, if I can't see what it is that you did, then as far as I'm concerned, it's the same thing as if you'd actually done it. Like if I can't tell what trick you used it must've been a variety of things of composites and faces and CGIs and, mm-hmm, stuff, but they do really a good job with it to make it seem real. And then, of course, the movie ends with footage of the real people so we can see how good the impersonations were. And also to show that, yeah, this dumb thing that we showed Sean saying, yeah, he really said something like that in a real interview. But Sean, but you don't. But you're not, Sean. Man, so good. What do I give this? I don't remember what I give this. I give this, Tonya, it's a B+.
I give Itanya a 9 out of 10, and it could get higher upon second viewing.
It couldn't get much higher.
I know, but it still could get higher. Mm.
Well, good for you, Tonya. Everything's coming up, Tonya.
See, I told you, everything in December, 9 out of 10. You can just put it down.
Oh, and The Shape of Water, I think, is expanding to more places this week.
It's getting bigger. It's like somebody put a sponge in that movie title.
Another sponge is getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it's kind of weird that the wide releases are sort of petered out for a couple of weeks.
You couldn't give me Jumanji this week?
Right, yeah, because it's going to be like 50 the week of Christmas. Not 50, but like 6.
50 Jumanjis?
No, like it's like 6 movies, wide releases. Oh, why not put a couple of them out now? I don't know. I don't know how this business works. I don't know. I'm sure they know what they're doing. They're the experts. But then we also have some other movies we can tell you about. Smaller movies.
They're not like you don't have to squint.
Right. Yeah. No, it's small in release uh-huh. Strategy, not small in size. They're the same size as other movies as far as that goes.
If you live in a special city, you might be able to see it.
Mm-hmm. There's one called BPM, which stands for Beats Per Minute. And this is a French movie. I believe it's nominated for one of your awards, isn't it?
The Critics' Choice Awards has nominated it for Best Foreign Film.
Mm-hmm. It's French. This is the specific kind of foreign that it is. And it's sort of based on kind of a true story about AIDS activists in Paris, the group ACT UP, and their efforts in – it seems like it must be the 90s. I feel like the movie doesn't ever exactly tell us when it is, but it seems to have been not the present anyway, the 90s. It's a lengthy movie, 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
My. And it's not a musical.
No. And the reason it's called Beats Per Minute is a reason that I don't know. It didn't tell us.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think I would have the entire time, it would have been like, well, any moment now. For some reason, yeah, Beats Per Minute. And it looks like on the cover, on the poster, it looks like the guy is singing.
Like at a rave or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought that's what we were
doing. Yeah, they go to clubs, of course. I mean, it's about gay people in Paris. Of course, they go to clubs. So there's some of that music and all. But yeah, I don't quite get the connection with BPM. But it ultimately ends up being about, actually pretty interesting, about the political factions within the ACT UP group, about their different strategies. Some people want to focus on shaming the pharmaceutical companies into releasing their trial results so they can help patients. Others want to focus on legislation, and they disagree on how how confrontational they want to be as activists. So there's the factions with the group, and it's about a new guy who becomes the boyfriend of one of the longstanding members of the group who also has AIDS. The new guy does not, and they become boyfriends. And so it's that story. It's a good movie about sort of an important subject, and it's entertaining as far as it goes. I don't think it's great, and it definitely feels too long.
Have you seen this director, Robin Campillo, his other films?
I have not.
He's got two others, Eastern Boys and
They
Return. Yeah, They Came Back.
No, I'm not familiar with either of
those.
They
Came Back looks like an interesting concept here. The lives of the residents of a small French town are changed when thousands of the recently dead inexplicably come back to life and try to integrate themselves into society that has changed for them.
That would change things if the dead came back. That actually sounds familiar.
An hour 42. Yeah. Oh,
like it already. Anyway, BPM, good. I would say recommended if the subject matter interests you. Either gay rights or AIDS activism or attractive French people. And it's a B. It's a solid B.
Yeah.
And then you caught up on some things.
I did. I caught up with American Made, which is a Tom Cruise film that did not get the attention that a Tom Cruise film such as this would have gotten in years past.
Yeah, that's true.
This would have been
his star is waning.
It is. And what's weird is he's Barry Seal. And you saw this movie when it was screened for critics. He becomes a drug runner for the CIA. And there's a lot of good stuff going on here, directed by Doug Liman. And Tom Cruise acts like he's showing up with a little bit of an accent. He's trying some things. There's some.
He's from Louisiana in the movie.
Yeah, there's some handheld camera aspects of it. It is a funny movie. It moves quickly. It's a good cast overall. And including by me, I guess, got overlooked. But then I was absolutely thrilled that I saw it because I am still a big Tom Cruise fan when he's in movies. Mm-hmm. And it's an 8 out of 10 for me. It is not BS approved because I think you were a B or a B minus.
I gave it a B.
All right. But yeah, no, I had a lot of fun with it.
Good. All right. American Made, noted for the record.
Thank you.
And then a couple others that I saw. You saw Stronger, finally.
I finally saw Stronger. Oh, my goodness.
Right? This is Jake Gyllenhaal losing his legs in the Boston Marathon.
That was Jake Gyllenhaal? Man, he's good. Yeah. Here's the thing. I think you had talked about it, too. This based on a true life, but it doesn't have the usual beats. Like, it really feels intimate and particular with its story. And all of his Boston friends are just great whenever he's hanging out with them. totally agree. And Lenny Clark as Uncle Bob, phenomenal.
Yeah.
I heard a story about Jake Gyllenhaal and him. They were friends for a long time. They had known each other because their families ran in the same circle. And it was so Jake was a producer on this film. And right. Lenny Clark came in to audition. He was like, you better give me a... Oh, I can't do it. Never mind. I can't do it.
Exactly. I know what you're going for, yeah.
But yeah.
Better give me a plot, Jake.
Yeah, you give... And then he was like shocked that he actually had a sizable part.
Well, that's funny.
But yeah, nice. He does a great job. And Jake and the lead, who I was not familiar with, Tatiana Maslany.
She's on that Orphan Black, isn't she? I think that's the show she's on.
Yeah, it's a show I haven't gotten into. And
it's the one show you don't watch.
Yeah. Their relationship is phenomenal. And what you realize is how much stress it puts on anybody that goes through something like this, where he plays the real-life Jeff Mauman, who loses his legs in the Boston bombing, the Boston Marathon bombing. And I think I had streaming tears four different times.
Yeah.
Movie ended, and it was like, oh my gosh, where are my boys? I need to hug. Mm. Like that, it was.
Make sure they still got their legs.
Yeah. It's a solid 9 out of 10. I loved it.
Excellent. So that movie is BS approved retroactively. Stronger, BS approved. And then Wonderstruck.
Yeah.
This is the Todd Haynes movie about the kids. One in 1977, one in 1927.
Not Wonder. It's not Wonder Wheel. It is Wonderstruck. It is the year of Wonder.
It's not Wonder Woman either.
It's not Wonder Woman. Do we only have the four?
I think so at this point.
Okay. There's still time.
Yeah.
Yeah, these kids are just great actors. Like, it really is. And I was very much enjoying the entire film and looking forward to the connection. Mm-hmm. And then that third act just brings it to a higher level that really does feel like fantasy, even though it's just, a really classic, solid drama. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness for that ending. So I ended up giving that an 8 out of 10 as well.
Also BS approved, Wonderstruck.
And Julianne Moore, the dual role like you were talking about.
Moore.
So she's got four parts in two movies.
That's right, because she was also she was the twins in Suburbicon.
Sub-Unicorn.
Sub-Unicorn, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great for Julianne Moore. We see four of her in two movies.
Yep.
You like getting your money's worth for Julianne Moore.
It's like you're paying a discounted price when you see that. You're like, oh my goodness, I should have given you $1 or $2 more.
That is value added. And then also you saw something that I haven't seen.
It finally happened. The Merowitz stories, new and selected. That's in parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
This is your Netflix here. This is the future, Eric.
I know.
I don't know if you know this. Plays at film festivals and then just goes to Netflix.
Right.
And this here has the actor known as Adam Sandler, not the person named Adam Sandler that we see do a lot of movies. This is the actor.
Oh, is he acting in this one?
Yes, he is.
Do you want to tell them who wrote and directed the movie?
Oh, good old Noah Baumbach. Yeah. And it's all about this family. And the stories are, in a sense, like it follows a timeline for the most part and just like dips in and out of it. And okay. So then you're just like, okay, months passed. Got it. Okay, this is where I'm at. And then you go about it. And Danny, and so that's Danny is Adam Sandler.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have.
Is Dustin Hoffman's dad?
Yes.
Dustin Hoffman is Adam Sandler's father. All right.
Also
Emma Thompson.
No, goodness. Let me get the actual.
She's in it.
On here. No, I know. Just give me a second. And Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller and Adam Sandler are half brothers in this film.
Oh, okay.
And it's a dysfunctional family with a self-obsessed, failed, not failed, an artist that didn't realize his potential in Dustin Hoffman.
Okay.
And Emma Thompson's a drunk fourth wife for Dustin Hoffman. Mm-hmm. And there's lots to enjoy here. And Judd Hirsch is in it as well. Like Sigourney Weaver has a little cameo. But most importantly, it's with all of the there's an awkward moment here where there is a reference to something that happened in the past. Mm-hmm. And Dustin Hoffman's character overlooked it.
Hmm.
And it's just really kind of creepy that that's sitting there in this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. But overall, very good film.
It really sounds like a Noah Baumbach movie.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. And most importantly, Ben Stiller. it's almost too easily teed up for him. But he has one scene where he's giving a speech in a crowd and he's blubbering like a baby. And I haven't seen that level of commitment to emotional angst by Ben Stiller. And I liked it.
Good.
So that was cool. Totally worth it. 7 out of 10.
All right. The Meyerowitz stories or something.
New and selected in parentheses.
Hey, then we have some news about Patreon for our agents, for our special agents listening to the show. Patreon is changing the way they do their fees, and the long and short of it is that we're going to switch from asking agents to pay $1 a show to asking agents to pay a certain amount per month, basically become per month rather than per episode.
Yeah, we're thinking like what, $400 or $500 at the max?
Yeah, like $400 or $500 a month from each of you. No, and the thing is they're adding new fees, and so every time that you pay, there's like a little sales tax added to it, and so to reduce the number of times that you pay, we'll switch to once a month instead of every right. week. Anyway, you'll get.
And we're talking about, for the record, we're talking about I think 35 cents, right?
Yeah, it's a small fee, and Patreon is adjusting the way they do the fees so that the Patreon creators, which is us. We'll get a more regular, predictable amount of money each month. Because in the past, depending on fees and stuff, it has varied from month to month. This way, we will always get 95% of what people have paid. And the fees are sort of spread out between Patreon and us and you. Anyway, if you are an agent, you don't need to worry about it. You'll get an email if there's any instructions of things that you need to do or change. But just so you know, we're aware of it, we're on top of it, and it'll be fine. It'll just be a new way of doing it. But
everything's going to be fine. Everything's fine.
You should definitely become an agent because we got some stuff.
Yeah, we're going to be we're probably going to wait a little bit so that way.
We'll wait till January. We'll give you the month to become an agent if you're not already.
Maybe you'll get a little holiday money and realize, hey. Maybe I can throw a little movie BS his way. But anyway, I think this falls under the category of swag. So not only are we going to have some movies, but we're going to have some extra stuff going on. And we would like you guys to join so then we can give it to you.
Other stuff such as?
Some screenplays, some original scores, and also maybe a few other cool little things that I've gotten that I don't necessarily need that it makes sense to give to some movie fans.
Right. Yeah. The studios will they waste just a fabulous amount of money sending out stuff, most of which is garbage, but some of which is actually useful.
That's right.
the printed versions of screenplays and soundtracks and stuff like that. So
yeah.
The stuff that isn't garbage, we'll be giving it away to agents in January.
That's right.
So become one this month if you're not already. Now it's time to talk about the movie of the month. I hope you all appreciated the extra week we gave you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You are too. You're welcome too.
Our movie of the month was Grave of the Fireflies, a Japanese cartoon from 1988 that is very well known for being super sad. And for being a lot of people's one of their favorite Japanese animated films, anime. It's called anime over there.
Studio Ghibli.
And we both had not seen Grave of the Fireflies before. My reluctance to see that has been based on two things. One, I just generally don't care for anime. Now and then there's one that hits me, like Spirited Away and a few of the Ghiblis, but just overall it just doesn't quite connect with me. And I feel like you're kind of the same way. I think we've talked about this before.
Yep. Yeah. My Neighbor Totoro was the one that hit me, but I really tried hard. It was in my wheelhouse at the time with wanting to introduce it, something like this to my kid. All that stuff was just going my way, and it really hit me. But like even Spirited Away, I was disappointed with back in the day.
So those movies are fun. And then there's Grave of the Fireflies.
Oh boy!
Well, it's a cartoon animated film set in 1945 in Japan.
And one of the first lines of the film.
Oh yeah, the first line is the night I died was whatever night. Yeah,
that was the night I died.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Any film set in Japan 1945 is not good. Nothing good is going to happen in that movie.
This is what for me. Two things off the bat. Mm-hmm. With this kind of animation, you're ready for something geared more towards fantasy based on the track record.
I suppose, yeah.
Like for me, and I have an issue with these movies and the dubbed versions. I watched the dubbed version. Did you watch the dubbed version?
Yeah, it's the only version that's available, I think.
There is something about that. I don't know if they're hiring the wrong voice actors or whatever it is, but there's something about like everybody sounds the same volume, or they're not getting the emotion right, or they're just not a high enough quality voice actor or something like that to where it feels removed. And I'm not just talking about the lips not being perfect.
Which wouldn't be anyway, because it's animated.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's hard to know without hearing the Japanese track, if it's any better. But yeah, anytime I watch a dubbed movie, I feel like we probably did not get the best. Sometimes now when they'll do dubbed versions of the foreign cartoons, they'll get good actors and they make an effort. But 30 years ago, not so much. It was just sort of, whatever voice actors they had. And I think that probably does hurt it some.
The film immediately lets you know that this boy had a little sister and the little sister died. And he's now dead
also
too.
Also dying, yeah, or has died.
And now, let's tell you the story of how that happened.
How that happens. Teenage boy, almost soldier age, and then his younger sister. Their father is in the Navy. He's off at the war. Their mother dies early in the film.
Oh, gosh. Man, oh, man.
And then they're on their own. And there's not like really a social safety net. They've got a relative who doesn't really like them, that takes care of them reluctantly.
Most adults in this movie are total jerks. I get that they have a lot going on because, war and all that kind of stuff, bombings.
And we see that it's everybody's starving. Like nobody, there's not enough food. Things are rationed. Like it's just sort of the whole.
It just would have been nice to be like, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't.
Yeah.
Like, I can't help you. I have to help my family. Like, that would have been nice to hear on occasion as opposed to, what are you doing? You're a jerk. Get out of the way. That sort of thing.
It's scary to see society break down like that, where there's people going hungry and there's not enough food and there's just nothing to be done about it. That's not a familiar situation for us, fortunately.
I was not emotionally invested.
Yeah.
Until... Oh man, when the little girl gets sick, and then there's a scene where he finally takes her to the doctor. Yeah. She lifts her shirt up and she's got a rash and she's skinny as all heck. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about, please give her something. And like the doctor's just like, next.
She's malnourished. She needs food. That's all. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like I just started bawling and I couldn't believe how much I was bawling, considering it wasn't done that well. Like after that, there's a scene where she's holding some rocks, but she's talking about them being rice balls, and it's all way too sweet from this girl who I gotta say was kind of an annoying girl.
Sure.
with a little too much energy. But when she gets sick, she's so sweet and cute. Like most children, they're much better when they're sick.
Yes. Once they calm down. and stop right. pestering you with their laughter and their joy.
But like, because not only does the movie not necessarily get her death scene correct, like right after that, there's this guy who's like helping this teenage boy to explain how to cremate her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, he's like, in spite of it all, it's a lovely day.
Yeah.
It's like, what is going on here with you? But like, what are you trying to tell me? No, it's not a lovely day. We're focusing on this, and this guy knows it. The kid just died.
The director, so this is regarded as an anti-war film because of all the terrible things that happened because of the war. But the director's consistently said that it was not an anti-war film. This is what he said. He says, it's not at all an anti-war anime and contains absolutely no such message. He says that he wanted to convey the image of the brother and sister living a failed life due to isolation from society.
What?
Not that they like isolated themselves, but because of being cast off from society,
they
slipped through the cracks. Which I guess is, I mean, I see most films about war as being anti-war films because they hardly ever show the good parts of like the good stuff that comes from war,
like the high fives from
right,
like,
you know,
fellow soldiers.
Most war movies are anti-war, but I see what he means here, that it's less about the war. Like, look at the evil that the Americans or whoever did upon Japan and tearing the society apart. Just how when things collapse. How people, some members of society fall through the cracks and get lost. And that can happen because of war or because of other things. I kind of feel the same way you did, that it's sad in the general sense, but I wasn't terribly invested in it. It's well drawn and animated. The style of animation where, it's not cartoonish. It's very realistic. The way the people are drawn is its own thing. It's a different kind of cartoon from others, which I guess is why the people who love animation say that they shouldn't all be lumped in the same category. Because it is. It's hard to compare this to, you know, Toy Story.
Yeah. you know, I was actually – I was kind of surprised that it hadn't been remade.
Mm.
But it's actually been remade twice.
Oh, has it?
2005 and 2008. No, both in Japan.
Oh, other Japanese and versions.
Both live action.
Interesting. See, live action would make it harder to watch because that would be more realistic and more like I can deal with cartoon children dying if they're animated, but real children. Yeah. Anyway, it's a I don't know who to recommend this movie to. If you like really sad Japanese cartoons,
right?
I mean. Yeah, as a work of as a piece of art, it's fine. Probably better in its original Japanese. But now we've seen it.
We have. We've seen Grave of the Fireflies, and I cried. But I
So our movie of the month for next month is, we think, probably a lighter, more cheerful movie. It's called Schindler's List. No, just kidding.
Well, one of us hasn't seen it yet.
It's called Stakeout.
Stakeout!
From 1987, which somehow we both have not seen. We've both seen the sequel.
Another Stakeout.
We've both seen another Stakeout. But
being diehard Rosie O'Donnell fans as we are.
Yeah.
Had to. I am positive this movie from 1987 is not going to hold up well.
Probably not. There's a good chance
Do you know why I know this?
Tell me.
If you look at the poster... Emilio Estevez is under a bed next to Richard Dreyfuss with a pair of binoculars trying to look at a woman.
I'm seeing another poster where they're under a bed. Dreyfuss is holding a gun and they don't have binoculars, but they're under the bed and there's a woman sitting on the bed taking off her shoes like she's about to get undressed or something. So, yeah, they're peeping on women, maybe, at least in the poster. You know how the posters were in the 80s, though. Like, the poster would tell you that it's all about peeping on women, and then there's no peeping on women in the movie. You know what I mean?
Wow. You know what? Hmm. This is the greatest thing ever. I just combined the posters.
You looked at two posters, and because there is one where they do have binoculars, right?
Another Stakeout. Another Stakeout has binoculars.
Okay.
Stakeout's not. So I brought the binoculars from Another Stakeout into Stakeout.
Anyway.
Maybe that'll be a good suggestion.
Sure, maybe. So Stakeout, if you've never seen Stakeout, we'll watch it with us this month, and we'll talk about it beginning of January. Probably not like one of the great films, like one of the important part of the canon, but a film that we probably should have seen, given the age that we are,
right,
and the society we live in. We should have seen Stakeout.
We should have.
So that's movie of the month. Now on to this week's DVDs, and we do have a giveaway.
Oh, yes, we do.
First, we're not giving it away, but you could go rent or buy now Despicable Me 3 if you wanted to.
You could. You could do that.
That is available. That's a thing that is possible. And then also Better Watch Out. Pretty good Christmas horror comedy.
I was really pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah, we saw
it. I saw it a year and a half ago.
It was last year at Fantastic Fest, and it was called Safe Neighborhood then. And then it came out now as Better Watch Out. I watched it again when it came out on VOD. Still like it. And we actually have a couple copies of this, don't we?
Yeah.
That's right.
We got two.
We got two copies. So, hey, two agents. If you're an agent and you want one of these, send us an email. Hey, Jeff, what's our email address?
Oh, wow. I was about to say Bayer. I was going to start with that. Give me a second. Mm-hmm. MovieBS@pdx.gmail.com. No, shoot. I said it too fast. Mm-hmm. MovieBS@pdx.gmail.com.
Very good. Perfect.
All right.
Seamless. If you're an agent, send us an email. Tell us you want a copy of Better Watch Out, and we'll put you in the running. I got to say, since we have two copies, if you ask for it, you're pretty good chance you're going to get it.
Whoa.
I'm just saying, statistically.
Well, there's a better chance than if there was just one. Sure, that's simple math.
Also, hey, take into account how so far we have not been having people asking for things just because it's free. We seem to people are asking for things only when they actually want it. And so a movie like this, it was more of a niche thing. Probably not that many other agents are going to be asking for it. So I'm saying if you think you might want this movie, you should ask for it.
I'm telling you, it's good.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's surprising.
Yeah, surprising.
Despicable Me 3, do you remember what we gave it?
I think that I gave it like a C plus or a C.
What do you think I gave it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really listen to your part of the show.
You gave it a C. I gave it a 6 out of 10.
Okay. I believe that.
I wonder why I gave it such a high grade. Oh, well. I'm not going to find out by watching it again.
Probably because Dylan was with you and he liked it.
Oh, that was, I was just going to say. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dylan watched it.
The old kid bump. The kid curve.
Yep.
And so that's all we got for you this week. We got I, Tonya. That's good.
Oh, man. So good.
If you're in New York or LA, see that and it'll open. It'll expand, you know, as things do. But just put that on your radar. BPM is decent if that's your thing. And then we retroactively made BS Approved stronger, which made you cry.
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. And what was the other one?
That we made BS Approved?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great question.
Wonderstruck was the other one. Wonderstruck.
Oh, yeah, Wonderstruck.
Also, you liked Wonderstruck and Meyerowitz Stories, but not as much. You guys were listening to the show. You know what we said.
And American Made. Don't forget that. See, I didn't think you were mentioning everything, so then I decided to stop thinking.
Right.
You know what happens when I choose to stop thinking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Right, we run into it at the end of every show during the recap.
What's that?
So until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.